Hey, you guys. That was weird. Welcome to I Love Green Guide Letters, the podcast where we talk about the ages radio and television lift out the Green Guide. I am Steel Saunders, and I do love Green Guide Letters. So the final live episode, end of the festival tomorrow, which is sad for no one, really. It'd be good for the street beggars of Melbourne to have the footpaths back. This girl came up to Dasilo. Me and Dasilo were having a drink after his show last night. And she said, I said, oh, you know, do you like cats here? Have this come to my show. And she looked at the flyer and then looked at me. And she goes, is this you? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, oh, you really look really good in this. But it's the last live episode. It's been so cool that everyone's come down. And like when I first did the podcast, I'd watch the download, the stats, like almost every 4 minutes. If they had stats to check how often I check the stats, they would be incredible stats. Because I'd see the downloads, but then when I'd meet people and they'd say, I listen to your podcast, it was like an invasion of privacy. Oh, you're listening in, are you? Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that? So it's cool that you all came down. It's pretty sick. I just want to thank a few people that helped out with all the live shows. So you can give Mikey and Kat that work at Spleen a big round of applause. And in brackets, we'll just have a little fuck you, Sizzlack. We'll put that in there. Big thanks to Marcus Newman that's doing the photos every week. He has a podcast called Comedy Del Parte, and which is part of his comedy show he runs in St Kilda at the George Bar every Thursday night. So give that a listen on iTunes. Big round of applause for Marcus. And at the back, we've got filming every episode that we're going to make any little clips on YouTube and that. We've got Pro Wrestling's own Paul Jones. Give him a round of applause. And also have to thank the winner of this year's Hottest Door Girl competition in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, my girlfriend, Jacqueline. And I just want to point out something, and people get confused about this. When I talk about how clean the house has to be for certain guests, it's not how clean Jackie makes it. It's how clean she makes me make it. So let's not get into any gender issues there. But she's worked very hard, and it's going to be nothing compared to how hard she has to work after the show when she's inundated with T-shirt sales. Okay, so make her earn her keep. And we should also thank all the guests we had throughout the comedy festival. We had Bart Freeburn, Andy Kinlaw, killed it. Will Anderson, Justin Hamilton, John Safran, Dave Callan, the Green Guides, very own Andrew Murfitt. And while we're at it, let's thank today's guests. Let's bring him in. One of our favourite ever guests, Mr. Lawrence Mooney. And from the Late Show, Get This Joy of Sets, Mr. Tony Martin.
Steady on.
Hello.
How are we doing?
Hello, Green Guide Letters fans. It's really lovely to be here. We're in an enclosed space. Nobody knows we're here. Come on.
There were no letters complaining about us this week, were there? Have you?
No, you featured in the Green Guide the week before last Thursday, and the show featured, and there were no letters this week.
No one came to my aid or... I would have loved a Purile. Get a Purile there out for me, guys.
Is there anyone here that has actually had a letter published in the Green Guide? Is there? You have, sir.
Are you angry of Camberwell? He's my favourite. People saying the word mal instead of maul is his. His bugbear.
What is your sign-off?
It was a long time ago. I was a production manager at a radio station.
Right.
Gagged out Lee Simon because he was in an article, which is why my radio career was...
Right. So you're kind of like a whistleblower. Just
yeah.
Lee Simon's and that's, wipe shit on the walls of the cubicle.
What had Lee Simon done? Grown his afro too large?
He had an article saying that people who complain about not enough indie music on radio should shut up. That they knew what they were doing because they were the professionals.
Right.
And if anyone wants his advice, he'll invoice them.
But first, here's the new one from Toto.
Rain down in Africa.
And that's it's Rob, yeah?
Yeah.
Yep. And then, so after you got exiled by FM radio, you got sent to Ballarat, yeah?
As is traditional.
Yeah.
Which was worse, that it was a promotion to come back to Ballarat.
Right. That must have been some letter that got you kicked out of Mount Gambier. Yeah.
Right. I was absolutely hated there.
He did promise me you're like a
radio refusenik. You just get pushed out of all the places. Oh, I should have got excited about that sentence, and then my brain abandoned me.
But we're fellow page 16. Green Guide article buddies. Lawrence is in the Green Guide in page 16 this week.
I know
week.
Nobody ever gets to page 16 of the Green Guide because it means going through 32 pages of sales in the middle there. So who's going to read that shit, you know, like magnify, unless you're into tech. But yeah, so page 16, woo! Yeah, we rule that page.
Well, our listeners probably didn't see either of our articles because it's both on the radio, what's it called, the Live Wire, the radio page where all the channels are, and you guys are probably all too concerned kilohertz is capitalized correctly.
Is it small K, capital H, small Z?
I think so, yeah. Is that? Yeah, okay. Yeah. That was solved.
Everyone knows that. hey, just look at that roof. Isn't that classic old Melbourne? Look at that. If you wanted to be the Phantom of the Green Guide Letters podcast, you could live up there. Let's get on with the show.
So this is the smoker's room at Spleen.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Spark them up.
Now's the time.
So, dear Green Guide.
Dear Green Guide, I got very stoned at that thing on the thing.
Well, are we getting to... There was a mispronunciation this week, wasn't there? Or have you... Are we building to
Let's
that?
Let's bide our time, Tony Martin.
Really?
Let's...
Don't want to bust out the big guns this early.
You close with mispronunciations.
It's actually pronounced mispronunciation.
Oh, here you go.
On this podcast. Are so you Steel doesn't feel weird.
Are you sending in letters yourself to prolong
your... No, no, you can't. We have a thing called the Green Guide Prime Directive, much like on Star Trek The Next Generation,
right.
Where we observe the letters. We must never disrupt the letters.
Interfere.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm your Patrick Stewart, and he's young Riker, and Will Wheaton.
That'll be me.
I want to be the black lady.
I want to be Worf and fuck you. Too soon for that sort of thing?
I want to be Scotty.
I just remembered that my girlfriend's mum's here as well. So can we edit your memory of that?
So keep your latent homosexuality to yourself.
Yes. Interspecies homosexuality.
Interspecies. Okay.
Now, Tony Martin, I'm not sure what it is with your mind games that you're playing with me via the email. Like you had requested that we just keep it as a mystery guest.
Yeah.
And then I get all these tweets and emails that you're on Triple R spruiking your appearance.
Really?
Yeah.
Was I?
Yes.
No, was that on Tony Wilson's?
Maybe it was Tony Martin from Blue Murder that was spruiking it there.
Could have been the German cyclist or the seventh lead singer of Black Sabbath. Or the former husband of Sid Charisse. We can, I will, keep going through all of them. Rugby league player, folk singer from New South Wales. And there is another one.
That must be some sweet IMDb page you've got there.
Oh, I'm number 3 on the IMDb because the Reverend Bob got in early. Are you in the internet movie database, Lawrence?
Yes, I am.
Do you ever find things that you had nothing to do with? Do you ever find porno movies where there's someone with a similar, like Lawrence Mooney with
Do they put porno on IMDb?
Yeah, I think the IMDb was actually started by, this is serious, by a man in the pre, when the internet, what was the internet before anyone could have it?
It was
the army.
Scientists at uni.
Yeah, someone started a database of all their porno movies and then that expanded outwards.
See how early that great form of communication was corrupted.
But don't you, I mean, every technology is quickly used for porn, don't you find? If it's the internet or the photocopier or a vacuum cleaner, doesn't matter what it is that's invented, people will find a blue use for it.
I was watching morning TV and saw one of those robotic sweepers. It's like, it'll sweep a room when you're not there. And my immediate thought was, a man has fucked one of them. If you look at anything anywhere and you think a man has fucked that, you are correct. A man has tried to root everything. Not the same man. When I say a man, he doesn't go around the world.
Well, is anyone here... Now, I just want to reference episode 9, a landmark episode of the podcast where Lawrence really exposed a few mental issues, I have to say. Is anyone here named Nadine? Good. Okay. I just don't want you to call anyone a filthy shit eater again. That is...
Okay, I've got to qualify that by saying and I might have said it on episode 9 that I'm good friends with and always had a crush on Nadine Garner.
Yes, you did say you did qualify it with, you added a bit to the equation, if your name's Nadine and you're from Inverloch and you write letters about the White Room.
That's right. She got into the White Room.
Yeah.
I think it's important at this point to say that you didn't say that Nadine Garner is a filthy shit eater.
No, that's right.
Just get that out now.
And I'll defend the White Room. Three episodes were shot. Only two went to air. Well, I was in one of them. So the unseen third episode still exists, folks. It will be coming out on DVD.
Can I just say about White Room, and I'll preface this by saying I was in ADBC. And did you do an ep of that?
No, I didn't do an ep of that.
It was like a giant white set. Everyone just somewhere went, this is a bad idea to have a giant white set panel show. And then I tuned into the White Room. It was whiter and larger. And I met George McEncroe and I said, that set was so huge. It was like you needed a megaphone to speak to the people on the other panel. And she said, that was part of the problem. We couldn't hear what the people on the other team were saying.
Yeah. There was a lot of problems with it.
Okay.
I reckon two great hosts, Tony Martin and Tony McClair, and Julian Schiller. But I think two hosts is a dicey thing. Mm. I don't know. Mm. What do you reckon? Well, feelings, thoughts?
I don't know.
Objections?
Daryl Summers and Jackie McDonald, there was a tension there. It never really went away.
But there was definitely the sidekick protocol in place there.
Yes, it was the old Alan Partridge, I'm the host, you're the co-host kind of formula.
Jackie McDonald. Those big nits.
Do people remember Jackie McDonald? Do people remember Fiona McDonald?
Fiona McDonald.
She was the sister who was on It's a Knockout. Right. She was the one who had to giggle whenever Billy J. Smith said, he's fallen over!
Well, we were talking about Hey Hat Saturday 2 weeks ago with Will and Hammo because there was a letter written in by a John Blackman.
To the Green Guy?
Yeah, and we were like just joking about how it was John Blackman. But Paul up the back somehow bumped into John Blackman and confirmed it was him making the complaint.
About what?
What was it? What was it? What was he complaining about?
It was about the, I think it was people texting in for the traffic report.
Oh, so that was him that started that?
Because, he was the one that did it, because I do a party show on 3RRR and he was one of the guests. And I mentioned, did you write a letter for the Green Guy? And I thought he'd go, yeah. He all of a sudden, after that, he goes, oh, that, and he starts giving me the story from the beginning.
Oh, Blackers. So he thought there should be a warning about texting your traffic updates, but pull over first, and it was just very irresponsible.
Blackers, I know him to, you know, talk to and say good day to, and he is deliciously bitter. Like his,
yeah, he is.
If you're prepared to stand there while he rants and raves, you just have to start him. Any network, any radio network in Australia, any TV personality, any show, and we had asked him to appear. I was doing Drive on MTR. That station that used to exist and no longer does. And he was asked whether he'd like to do it, and he just goes, he'd gone, fuck that, I'm not going into MTR. He goes, first of all, the Macquarie Network did this to me in 1985, so they can fuck off. And then they did it again in 1992, so you can jam it up your ass. And, you know, Southern Cross, well, fuck them, because blah, 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 I did this voiceover and I'm still waiting for the payment. And it's like, wow, your bitterness has got, like, subsections. It's got a Dewey decimal system of, like, who fucked you over and when?
But I, another thing about Black is, do you remember when he was doing a breakfast show in Adelaide and he said,
from his,
who could forget? From his house. And he went, and they went, right, and he goes, I'm not going to go to Adelaide. And they're going, right, well, you can just drive down to St Kilda to the studios there. He's going, I'm not even going to go to St Kilda. So they had to set up a microphone in his house.
he was doing it from his house, making references to the, you know, Rundle Street Mall and how I was driving down Frome Street this morning. He just had all these traffic references. It's just a sham.
Paul, maybe Ixnay hassling him to come on the podcast now. I think that
every time I come on, it's just like red lines for potential guests. Ryan Maloney.
Well, we were going to get, we were trying to get Ryan Maloney on to confront Lawrence about the allegation.
The allegation. So it was more a mad rant about his lack of commitment to the character of Toadfish. Because I think that he's let his own life bleed into Toadfish's life, in that he's lost an enormous amount of weight because he's on light and easy. And I just think that that is a disgrace as an actor. I think that you've imposed your own life on Toadfish, and Toadfish is a fat guy. And, so and I'm reviled by that lack of commitment to the character. In fact, you know, you owe Toadfish. You should take Toadfish to a new realm of personal degradation.
Yes. So do you think he should be wearing a Jiminy Glick style fat suit?
Yeah.
When he plays
at the very least. Right. I want the piercings and the ponytail back on Toadfish.
But we were trying to get onto him, and then it was mentioned to Lawrence, and Lawrence just went,
oh, I didn't snuff out the idea. My face might have said, are you fucking serious? Because if he hasn't heard it, I don't want you to go, listen to this. Come on and have a chat about Lawrence Mooney.
I was a bit worried after you gave me that look. Fleety killed Daphne and then fucking one-upped by Mooney killing Toadie in real life. That would...
I mean, you know, I think that if there was more commitment to character on Neighbours, it'd still be on 10 rather than on 11, so... I truly believe that. I think that they've got slack, and it's ever since, you know, what's her name? Helen, what's her name? Russ? Jan Russ. She was in charge of casting. Jan Russ left. She was like, she really drilled them quite hard, and then she left and it all went out the window. I know about the Crawford Productions, okay, so everyone's thinking he's quite mental, isn't he?
Hey. This is an insider. This is Neighbours' own man in pub.
Yeah. Were you man in pub?
Neighbours' man in pub. Yes, I am actually the man in the pub, because the one appearance I did on Neighbours was next to Terence Donovan in the pub drinking beer at Lassiter's.
Right.
But our call time was like 8 o'clock in the morning, so we're lining up beers. And they were fake beers. It's just awful. But that's my screen time with Terence Donovan, father of Jason, wife of Sue McIntosh.
And you have, you pop up in things. Are you in Phoenix?
Yeah,
like
I'm in Phoenix.
Third SAS man or something?
I'm in Phoenix as, this is interesting because I did Phoenix was an ABC cop drama.
Great.
Very gritty, really good. And there was a bunch of extras hired for the whole season. So I think they did, you know, 12 or 13 episodes. It was, you know, almost half a year of shooting. And we were there full time, and they'd say, you know, in this shot, go over to that filing cabinet, pick up some files, walk back through here, you know, all that. So it was all the same featured extras. There was a team of about five of us. And I said to the director one day, and extras never talk to directors because directors don't like it. I said, I think there's a problem with your police station. It's like... his thought bubble was, fuck off. But, and he kind of, through gritted teeth, he goes, oh, yeah? And I said, yeah, there's five cops in this police station that nobody ever talks to. There's five cops that never play another part, but they're constantly there. I reckon that's an issue. He goes, all right, fine. So we get to the end of this episode and somebody, the story is somebody's leaving the force or this group of, you know, special crime detectives. And he goes, can you sing Danny Boy? And I said, yeah. And he goes, all right, you're pissed in this scene and you're singing Danny Boy. I went, made to order.
And did your fee go up as a result of that?
I think I did get something extra for, you know, actually saying words.
Because, see, when you say that the directors don't like the extras to talk to them, that's because the director is not allowed to address the extras.
Oh, yes, it's a rule.
It's an equity ruling. If there's a bunch of extras and you need them to move over a foot, you have to tell the first assistant director who tells the second assistant director who tells the third assistant director who goes and tells everyone to move over. Because if the director directly addresses an extra, they become a featured extra and they then their fee doubles. So often extras will try and trick the director.
Yes.
They'll approach the director at lunch and go, can you tell me where the toilets are? Oh, it's just down, bang, $125. That's a real thing.
That's why he was going.
No, just miming.
Now, when you were doing The Late Show, there was no green guide then. I don't think.
Yeah, there was.
Was there?
There was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think there was.
Really?
There definitely was.
I couldn't go back.
I think it was referenced on the show.
Yeah, I think we might have even have read out.
There was other ones. I found some complaint. Other ones. This is a good one. So this is, I couldn't find any green guide letters about The Late Show.
Right.
But I found some pretty sweet reviews.
Oh, we got nothing but bad Warnicke reviews.
Ross Warnicke. Ross Warnicke used to get referenced on the show.
He used
sure.
to hate it because there was... Now, you know the guide, the TV guide on the back of the Saturday Extra, that won't actually have any qualitative statements in it. It'll just say, Inspector X, detective program. It won't say, terrible detective program. Ross Warnicke made an exception for our show. And I actually had a little sort of collage I'd made every week for 20 weeks. He came up with another one. It would be a one-hour comedy show that's 55 minutes too long. And he came up with 20 of those. He had one for every week of the show. He hated us that much.
But we're all, like, there's heaps of fans of The Late Show here, yeah? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you. But it was hated for the first... It was the whole first year we got nothing but bad reviews, and the week of the last... the 20th week of the first series, Philip Adams wrote a good review, and everyone was like, what? Really? And it was like he gave people permission to like the show. Yeah.
I don't know. Have I told the story on the podcast what I used to do when I was in high school, like at parties and stuff? Have I said that? Okay, cool. Well, then I won't tell it here. But
no, tell me. I don't know.
Oh, okay, so...
What used to do at parties?
Yeah. Oh. Is this safe for your girlfriend's mum?
Yeah. I used to, like, on Saturday nights, we'd go, you know, there'd always be like a house party. And me and my friend would go in before we got on the Kahlua and talk to the parents and go, hi, we just really would like to watch this show at Channel 2, on Channel 2 at 10 o'clock. We'll come in. We'll not make a sound. Sit in there and then...
Wait till Birds of a Feather finished.
Yeah.
People who used to VHS The Late Show would always tell me we've got the last 5 minutes of Birds of a Feather.
That is sweet.
But it was a bizarre time. It was on 10 o'clock, which is a weird time because we'd piloted it as The Late Late Show for Channel 9. It was going to be on 11:30. And then it got up at the ABC and they're like, oh, well, it's not going to put it on 11:30, so maybe drop one of the lates. And then they wanted to put on 9:30.
At least they didn't drop the show.
No, well,
late, late.
Eventually they did, but they. But we just went, okay, 9:30. What is the earliest time you can say late in the name of your show? So we ended up with this half-assed 10 to 11 time slot, which was really bad for ratings because people would watch a movie at 8:30 on Channel 7. No one's going to switch over at 10, three quarters of the way through the movie. So our ratings would literally double at 10:30 on Saturday night. So there became a thing on the show to try and get your sketch on in the second half of the show.
Ah.
And because it was live, we would actually often just delay things, stretch the Viking thing out so that the good thing we've done would be on after 10:30.
So Saturday night.
Yes.
So yeah. up against, or coming off the back of Hey Hey too.
I guess. Yeah. Well, Hey Hey was 6:30 to 8:30.
Right.
And then, yeah, we were at 10.
Because that was the kind of like, you'd be getting ready to go out. And
yeah.
Hey Hey's on in the
background. Everyone, even if you hated Hey Hey, you would always have it on.
Yeah.
And it's my theory about that is that with live TV, there's the sense that somebody might get shot. You know what I mean? It's fun. I used to always have Frankie J. Holden's IMT on at my house just because it was live. You know, just in the background, something might happen.
When Stephen Jacobs was the Matthew Broderick of Australia. Alien television.
Man, was he in IMT with Frankie J?
Yeah, it
That's
was
a forgotten
Julian
show,
Morris.
Morris.
But the part of the ensemble right. on the billboard was Frankie J, Julian Morris, Stephen,
Jane Hall. Yeah, it was in that.
Well, Jane Hall was with Stephen in
Altogether Now. Altogether Isn't now. This a trip down memory lane? Yesterday was your hair so long. Sorry, I will sing. I will sing the theme.
One reviewer that really was against you at the time, which was always a mystery.
There
to
was
me.
A big three, and they're all dead. Robert, simple fact.
Enough said.
Robin enough Oliver, said. Ross Warnicki, Robert Fidgen. They
what about
us.
What about Insider, the fearless TV critic?
Oh, the Insider. I think that was actually Robert Fidgen writing.
Even when I was that young, if he's fearless, why does he fucking print his name?
Yeah, that's like, right. But they're all on our DVD as if you go through the stills gallery, it's like there's all our bad reviews are in there. They were the worst reviews ever.
Being a critic isn't good for your health, as evidenced by their lifespan.
Well, I remember there's an episode of... there's a thing we used to do called The Olden Days where we overdubbed Rush. Yeah. And there's an episode everyone else went away to the snow to film something and I had to write a whole episode of The Olden Days on my own. And it's the one where they're doing the body cavities. Colonel Frontbottom is doing the body cavity searches. And all the names of the people getting cavity searches are all people who'd given us bad reviews. Have a look. It's Warnicky, Fidgen, Teitelbaum, they're all there being probed. It was our pathetic childish revenge. Yeah. It feels good, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Now, I, when we have guests on, I like to bust out some classic Green Guide letters.
Yeah.
But this is the thing with the age.
The show started already. We're recording this.
Yeah.
I thought we were still warming up.
No.
This is like the Val Morgan ad at the beginning.
Pearl and Dean.
Oh, they were better.
When the slide comes up and there's just a pube stuck.
And Tony Barber going, thinking about pubes?
Yeah. How about something to eat after the film? Only 5 minutes from this cinema. Sharkies. Play pool.
And I was trying to find some get this ones.
Oh, yeah.
They were all...
They would all be written by the program director, I'm guessing.
They were all very positive. But the hard thing about finding get this things in the way I search for it is at the bottom of every age article, it says... Want to get this? Subscribe to The Age.
Right.
So everything page on The Age was coming up and I couldn't find anything. But I found one for The Joy of Sets.
Oh, yes. Presumably negative.
No, this is in line with all your negative critics dying. Right. Like almost threatening a hit.
There is a spectre, isn't there?
Yeah.
Everyone who criticizes you dies mysteriously.
Oh, listen to this one. Don't miss with Sets. Nine should look at the Triple M ratings plunge after they sacked, get this, Tony Martin has a militant fan base. Don't touch Joy of Sets.
See, I don't think I did use the word militant, but... Sorry.
Edward Clark, Essendon.
Yeah, well, I don't know Ed Clark, but there are some militant nerds out there. They marched on the station, burning effigies of the lead singer of Nickelback. When our show was axed.
I was there. I was inside the studio to do a little bit of Will and Limo's show, I think.
Yeah, right. That was on at the same time.
Yeah, well, it came next. So I was in the studio watching that final episode. It was a very emotional day.
I remember looking out and seeing like 400 protesters and banners and flaming effigies, and then just down in the corner at a phone booth, Greg Fleet doing a drug deal. That's... It's like the weird. It was like a Bruegel painting, and then down in the corner, he's Fleety on the phone, sweating.
Sounds like a Fred Negro cartoon from Pete.
Have you ever
been pointing to Fleety with some girl with her breasts pushed against the glass?
Have you been in pub, Lawrence? Have you ever?
That's really the ultimate thing. Oh, to be
the time Fred that Negro's I appeared pub. There.
What were you doing?
I was back room at the ESPY. Right. And so I was, again, a featured extra.
Right.
But Arrow, Lawrence Mooney, so-and-so. Right. And a friend rang me up and said, you're in pub.
Wow.
And
I didn't think
this was going to happen today.
and did you have the thing of keeping your pants on? Because that's really...
Yeah. I would have liked to have had my cock out in pub, but...
You're nobody in Melbourne until you've had your cock out.
I was smiling like this.
Just everyone knows pubs are comic strip, all right?
In the Beat magazine or Impress, one of them.
Hey, guys, how about we love some letters, huh?
Yes!
All right, here's the first one. No drum roll. The drum wasn't even nominated for a Logie, yet Carl Stefanovic was. Adam Hills' diatribe was gold. The Logies are like Moomba, outdated and irrelevant, but still daggy and fun. And that's from Melinda Smith, Melbourne.
I don't think it's actually Melinda. I read that.
Oh, Melina.
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 Which is a very weird name if you work in health. If you're a doctor or a nurse, you'll know that Melina is blood in your stools. And so...
I couldn't work out why you were correcting me so definitely, but
that's what amuses me about that letter. Anyone that would call their child Melina, it's like, you shouldn't do that.
Carl Stefanovic should have won Blood in My Stools, Elwood.
It has a lot more gravitas if you sign it Blood in My Stools, Elwood.
This person's not mucking around.
They haven't got a lot of time.
you outed Stefanovic as a droid.
Yeah, we used to maintain that he was a robot. He just sounded like, if you didn't look at him, you just listened, there was a certain slightly metonic, sort of metallic tone to his voice. And we would just get recordings of Carl Stefanovic and put really faintly just... noises underneath. And then people got behind it and... My favourite thing every day was to go to Carl Stefanovic's Wikipedia page and see what the picture was. And it was usually R2-D2. But yeah.
Did you ever get any feedback from Carl?
No, I don't think we've ever met him, but people would ask him about it on the show. Like, he would have to constantly deny that he's a robot.
Yeah. He'd demand that he was allowed in the Star Wars cantina.
Yes.
Carl Stefanovic is one of those guys that I just find so watchable. I will watch a bit of Today because he is the perfect kind of like droidish TV product. But one thing that amazes me about him is his ability to sing. When he gets into song, man, does he commit to it. He really... one morning on the Today program, he sung Unbelievable and he knew all the words. And I thought, good on you, Carl. You're getting my gold vote.
Don't you think there's nothing cuter than someone getting upset about Logie's results?
What would the drum have been nominated for?
Up against Carl Stefanovic.
Right.
What category would that be, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, there's no comedy section, is there? There's no best comedy program.
No, I think it's light entertainment.
Anymore. So, your Angry Boys will be up against MasterChef or something like that. It's a bizarre.
So there was a comedy section.
There was
wasn't
a comedy, yeah. There was at one point when comedy was popular.
No, I actually was asked to be one of the judges on Most Outstanding Comedy one year. And
because Outstanding is voted by peers,
yes.
And you have to watch.
So what the shows nominate by sending like a 5-minute clip of their best bit. It can't be a compile. It's got to be a piece from a show.
Right.
Which I think is quite limiting. But it was Chaser back then. Lily's first series, We Can Be Heroes, maybe second one. And it was quite was fun. Plus, I got to go to the Logies. Yeah, lick the dunny seat.
Have you got any...
When I say lick the dunny seat, I mean, it's not just something I like to do, taste famous people's asses. I mean, there's always some good coke on the dunny seat.
There's always a good... I have a really good story about someone using drugs in the toilet. So I just say Mr. X. Right, so Mr. X is in the toilets, famous Australian celebrity. Some kids come in, like doing a show for Channel 31, like a Jackass style show. They've got a hand, and they run along the top of the toilet cubicles with the camera just filming over the top. Mr. X comes out, grabs the guy, takes his camera off him, gets his mobile phone out, and calls his lawyer. And then they stand there for half an hour waiting for the lawyer to arrive. And I just go, what happened in that half an hour? Wouldn't that be a great play? Wouldn't that be a great one-act play? The conversation, people are coming in and out. You're standing there awkwardly, falling off your chair, causing a health and safety issue on an audio podcast. And what was said? What did they say?
And what did that camera see?
Well, because he was leaning over on the toilet seat.
Yeah, but maybe he was doing something else. Maybe he was like, there's a lot more going on. If he's gone, I don't mind doing a cheeky line, that might go to air, but the other thing that I was doing, I don't want anyone to see that.
That's right.
Maybe he was checking his stool for some...
For emails. For some Molina.
Molina, yeah.
Of Elwood.
I think the Logies are not like Moomba. I think they're more like the Birdman Rally. Contestants humiliate themselves before waking up in the Yarra.
I've been in the Birdman Rally.
No shit.
Really? What was your craft?
I was working on the Denise Show at the time as sidekick to Australia's most famous sidekick. And Channel 7 were covering Moomba and the Birdman Rally. So they said, why don't we get... Some producer at the Denise Show said, why don't you go in, but in a chicken suit?
There's a wingspan,
but essentially it's,
a chicken suit.
It's designed as a joke, essentially. Well, no, completely. So props made me this chicken suit out of rubber. It looked really great. I get inside, it's got a harness. It's a massive kind of like bird, and I've got the comb on top, and I'm getting onto the platform. And one of the cameramen says to me, who made the chicken suit? And I say, oh, Doug from props. And he goes, fuck, mate, good luck. And it's like, all right, they're sending him off and, you're in line. I said, what do you mean, good luck? And he goes, oh, once he did this incendiary device when he worked at Channel 10 and he blew somebody's fingers off.
He did the helicopter for Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
That was one of his. Enough years have passed.
He loaded the gun on the crow.
It was the same guy. He did all those things. So I'm thinking, well, what could go wrong? So I jump off, flapping and doing, and hit the water. And because it's rubber, but rubber sponge, it just takes water really heavily and became impossibly heavy very quickly. And I just went in and I couldn't get it off. And I was in a panicked state.
Dressed as a chicken.
Dressed as a chicken, which would have been a pretty ignominious end. That guy that died as a chicken. It's a tragedy for his family.
So many YouTube hits.
Yeah. But imagine the folklore. Oh, that's where the guy in the chicken suit, and they never found him. But
I am
certain
probably,
nights, you
I'm,
can
I'm
hear
probably
clucking.
Under, and something heavy is holding me down. So the little, rubber ducky comes over with the three lifesavers in, and they are all yanking me out of the water. And so I go, get up. And they're really straining. They get me over the edge of the boat and then just drag me in. And they're pulling with such force that the harness created like blue and black bruising up and down my rib cage. And one of them's just lying back there. He's like puffing as hard as I am. He goes, fuck, mate, you are lucky. We nearly lost you. It's like, Practical joke gone very bad. So when that cameraman said, good luck, I should have gone, do you know what? I'm out of here.
I'd like to think there was a row of actual chickens just pissing themselves back on the jetty.
Yeah. We can't swim. Should have dressed himself as a seagull.
Hey, but what was your distance? What did you what did you achieve?
I got deeper than I did.
Oh, yeah.
3 metres. But being in that brown, murky water, being sucked down, not pleasant.
But people will make, you know, something that's like a hang glider and it'll still only go like 5 feet.
Yeah. There's just not enough air.
No, it's not enough air.
I mean, really, to make it a proper Birdman thing, it should be 10 stories. So that when the payoff, you really pay off.
Yeah. I haven't thought it through.
All right, let's get to ads the loudest voice. Are Channel 9 doing all they can do to ruin The Voice? It could have been such a good show, but the ad breaks are as long as the segments. Clearly, the show is more about raising revenue than entertaining the viewers at home. Surge M. Whittington. Now, this is for commercial television. This letter is like their Zeitgeist documentary. This has really exposed what it's all about. Yes. It's all about raising revenue. This is.
I think Surge is. Well, before I go on, Surge is a medical term for. for having mayonnaise in your urine.
That's not mayonnaise, mate.
Yeah. But it is surging. All right.
It's called The Surge. So commercial television, they have been lying to us.
Yeah.
I thought it was all about the TV shows.
Yeah. No. Those ads, though, that it's the ads that they have about the show that's the worst. Like, you know, the ad with Delta, like they all turn around and... Delta's weeping and...
I know that you like to get a little bit of some of the forms of commercial television involved in your show too, some of the tricks. And I just want to announce to the crowd, I can't see you because I am legally blind.
It's that Yarra water took his eyesight.
That's right, Steele.
That's such bullshit. If you're blind, you've got an advantage at singing. Yeah. Give me a deaf dude killing it and then I'll cry too. Like,
I don't know whether you've turned around because I can't hear. Well, you can see them, yes, but that's not the point. I'm legally deaf.
And a blind
person... illegally deaf?
A blind person would also have an advantage because they wouldn't be, like, shocked by Seal's thing.
You know Seal's head, right?
Oh, sorry, Seal fans.
No, seriously, because you look at Seal's head and you go, wow, that scarring's amazing. My wife set me up for just wrong information. You know when you pretend to be an expert on something and you're just making it up and somebody else takes you at face value? I happily announced... to the production team at the Circle, did you know Seal's scars? They're war crime scars, and that's the reaction I got. Just you're a fucking idiot, because my wife had said he got them from war crimes. He's not from Africa. He's from England. They're acne. Is that right?
Does anyone know what's
Nobody
up with
Seal? Nobody knows. You laugh, but they might be war crime scars. Yeah, it's lupus. That's right.
Oh.
They're not acne.
Lupus.
Lupus, yeah. It's when you turn into a wolf. And yes.
I thought the scars were inflicted by a bitter and vindictive Terence Trent D'Arby. So I assume it's a kind of East Coast, West Coast thing. No.
Summer name. Yeah, I reckon that The Voice has got a couple of things. I like the fact that, you know, you can hit the button and your chair turns around. That's That's awesome. Whoever came up with that idea in staging just went, yes. Who's the guy with the tats on The Voice?
It's one of the Good Charlotte boys, I think.
Good Charlotte, right. That's right.
It's always a bad sign when American celebrities come here to do a reality show. It's sort of, you know, I'm not...
K-fed.
Yeah, it's just not... Like, you can't even get on one over there. It's not like Japan where you do an ad and it's very prestigious. Like, it's... It's an Australian reality show.
So we are so... we lack so much self-esteem in this country that if somebody from America comes here, we immediately presume they must be at the bottom of their game. We hate ourselves so much. You're on our show. You must be shit.
Listen, wipe off your Southern Cross tattoo. And there's a voice in America that he couldn't be a judge on, so he had to come here to do it. That's...
You mean it's not an original show? Why?
But there's a great test with the Logies is if you wait 5 years till after the Logies, look at who the international people were and you never remember who any of them were. So who was hanging from Mr. Cooper? What was that? Remember that? Hanging with Mr. Cooper. That was like Frank Sinatra had arrived in a helicopter when the bloke from Hanging with Mr. Cooper
went
to the Logies.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper. I do remember Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah, he said that Australian television rocked.
Yeah.
And it was like overnight people just stopped saying ... rocked. He just ended that trend overnight. And he was clearly wrong, and he hadn't seen any of it, and it didn't rock. He knew it didn't rock.
And then why did Muhammad Ali ever come out here to appear on our award show? Because we are
someone
shit.
Good.
You know, that is pretty amazing. What must have he thought?
Well, Bert Newton, that was some trouble, was it?
Called him a boy.
See, everyone remembers that. There are so many great things that people don't remember from the Logies that they need to do a special of just the worst of the Logies, don't you? That would be the best special ever.
I think it was on a couple Sundays ago.
It's called the Logies. But did you remember when Daryl Summers came out one year? He was hosting it, and at the end of the show, he loosened the bow tie and sat down on the stairs and announced he wanted to do a song for the little people, and it was the crew members. The members of the crew who never get thanked, the little people, like they were dwarves. And then he started
singing, oompa-loompa-dumpity-doo.
No, you know
I've
what he...
got come on, Aussie.
Everybody. No, what he did sing was, through good times and bad times, I'll be on. Just things like that. You never get all of them and join them up together.
That's what that guy after 10 years, I can't remember his name, is for. Lights Out, Less Dangerous. This was one that really caught our eye. Dancing with the Stars production people, please take note that strong flashing lights are dangerous for viewers with epilepsy. They actually detract from, rather than enhance, the dancers. And that's from Ardell Kellogg, Lower Plenty.
From Lower.
Now, what could be more Caesar-inducing than the dancing of Brendan Favola? Like,
Favola's been throwing a life boy, hasn't he? This is the last roll of the dice for Favola. Really? But where's it going to take him? What weird controversy? Where's he going to urinate? Where is he going to defecate? How much of a debt is he going to run up a Crown Casino? I mean, or is he going to come out with something completely new?
He needs some new material.
He does. It's all been done.
I had a lot of trouble trying to find out who Vogue Williams is. She's a contestant on Dancing with the Stars. That gave me a seizure.
What series do you reckon we're up to on Dancing? 8?
Oh.
9, maybe? Would you ever?
I've been asked to do it.
You've been asked.
And I seriously was. And I got this letter. They send you this letter, and it's... it's really casual. It's like, hey there, Tony. And but you notice that Tony is in a slightly different font. It's typewriter, but it's American typewriter. And then it's going, we thought that Tony. You would like to improve your fan base. You already have a lot of fans, but Tony, you will be more popular if you come up. And it's just, and you can see, you hold it up and you can see it's just, they haven't even bothered to type an individual letter for you.
Mr. Black.
It is Mr. Black.
But you're holding out for Celebrity Fit Club, obviously.
It's just too much. You know, we're going.
Celebrity Apprentice looks pretty good.
It's apparently
tantalizing.
But Dancing with the Stars is like joining the army, isn't it? It's like exhausting. Oh, yeah. Weeks and weeks of.
Fiona O'Loughlin was.
I've got episodes of Breaking Bad to watch. I've got a lot of DVDs to get through. I can't be.
Yeah,
dancing.
And the idea of really doing that for 6 weeks.
Yeah, no, too much.
To be condescended to by Todd McKinney.
That's right.
Really? I thought your dancing was appalling. Yeah, why don't you go to the park with your pants on? I mean, I'm all for, you know, some sweet drug taking and, you know, getting it on, but fuck, buddy, don't go to the park with your pants on and then tell me my foxtrot shit. What do you got, Helen? What have you got for me, Helen? You sexy old bitch. Straighten your wig, fuckface. I'm listening to Helen. That's when I get invited to Dancing with the Stars.
That is great.
They haven't asked.
I'll tell you who. Vogue Williams, for everyone, just get brace yourself. Since landing in Australia last year, Irish beauty Vogue Williams has fast made a name for herself as a model, ambassador, and in-demand DJ.
So you can't just be a model anymore, can you? You've got to be an ambassador.
You've got to be a slash.
Slash model. What happened to just being a model? You know, Gene Shrimpton.
I don't know, but when you've got that career as an ambassador calling, you can't pass up being an ambassador.
Oh, you're an ambassador for a charity, aren't you? You're an ambassador for kids in wheelchairs, or when you're an ambassador for kids in wheelchair, are you their ambassador to China, or just generally their ambassador?
I don't know. I'm just picturing her like her head, but the bottom after her neck, she's just dressed like Maya McCheese. She's just dressed all regally. But it's too late a McDonald's reference for all you people.
Mayor McCheese.
Lawrence loves me.
I do love you.
Saying words incorrectly.
No, I don't love you. Do. No, I don't.
What is that accent? Where's Mayor? Where's that? Is that like...
It's East Rosebud.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's lucky I can get out of
sentence.
We talk
different down there. You got a problem with that, Mr. Martin? Sir? You know, someone with an accent like that calls you sir.
No, I've never...
They are going to kick shit out of you very shortly.
I've never dared to cross the Rosebud Iron Curtain. To see what goes on in East Rosebud.
The Frankston Eliza line.
A little respect. I think Channel 7 commentators are wrong to call Gary Ablett the Little Master. How dare they? Anyone who follows cricket knows that Shaston... Is it... Help me out with this. Sachin Tendulkar is the Little Master and the only Little Master I have ever known. Get your act together, Channel 7, and stop this ridiculous tag. Gary Ablett is many great things, but he'll never be the Little Master. And that's from Gene de Vigor, Mooney Ponds.
I've got to concur with Gene there. I think if they're going to start, you know, using tags like that, why not follow on from the fact that they called his father God and call him Jesus?
Jesus.
Jesus Christ has got the ball. Then we all know. I mean, let's just keep it biblical.
Well, maybe
Son of God picks up on the, you know, half forward flank. Yeah, Christ Almighty. I think the appropriation of handles is terrible. When they called Wayne Carey the King, that was wrong. We know who the King is, right? Elvis is the King, you know. And God hadn't been attributed to anyone beforehand. Before Gary Ablett, so they were right there. But the Little Master, it belongs to Sachin Tendulkar.
Really? Well, I've got no idea who Sachin Tendulkar is.
Probably one of the greatest cricketers to ever have played.
Okay. I just thought Gene had Sachin Tendulkar and the Little Master were both nicknames for his penis. And it's like, there's only one Little Master.
I think Gene's onto a good thing here. I like the idea that, you know, once the handle's been attributed.
I like it when, I don't know much about football, but I like it when the footballer's wife gets to use the nickname as well. Like, who was Lethal?
Lee Matthews.
Lee Matthews. Yeah. And then his wife would always be Mrs. Lethal.
Right.
I remember seeing a Herald Sun hoarding out the front of a milk bar and it had Mrs. Lethal Speaks.
It's great. You've got no identity apart from the fact that you're married to a footballer.
See you on next year's Dancing with the Stars. That's good.
What's happening with Ron Barassi? What's that controversy? They're doing a movie of his life.
A musical.
Really?
Yeah.
A stage musical.
So Eddie Perfect did the...
Right. Oh, so it's a comedy
Shane
one.
Shane Warne. Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, comic, but cover some important issues. And he didn't endorse it and refuses to be a part of it. But I think he's now somehow fighting it, which you can't do. I think, you know, people can write what they like about you if it's not defamatory. So, you know, I think it's an interesting story. Now, Ron Barassi, not Mr. Football, but sometimes referred to as Mr. Football.
Yeah,
Ted Whitten, of course, Mr. Football. Ron Barassi. Hasn't got a nickname.
Barass,
isn't it? Barass.
Barass. But yeah, sometimes referred to as the coach.
Right.
But
that's a bit vague. That's yeah, something to catch on.
Good. But cheers.
We had a great incident with Ron Barassi on The Late Show. We used to do those musical numbers and we had, therefore he had to sing Goldfinger by Shirley Bassey. That was just had to happen. So we built this giant set, like a James Bond opening titles set, and Ron Barassi went, no, no, I'm only going to film it at my pub, which is in Richmond. And we're going, yeah, but it's the ABC. We can't plug the pub. Like, there won't be any mention of the name of the pub. It's a waste of time. And he's going, I don't care. I'm only going to film it at the pub. So we had to dismantle the Goldfinger set, take it down to Richmond and reassemble it in his pub with smoke coming in and smoke machines and fireworks and things going off.
He never
knew that it was happening in a room like this.
He pulled a Blackman on you.
He did a Blackers.
And how was it? What was his...
He just spoke it, I think.
Yeah, he just fit, it was like a spoken word. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
He's the man with the Midas touch.
Yes.
Such a cold finger.
But I remember.
I wish I could spin my seat around now and approve
and have
that song
here too.
But Tom Gleisner told me that his favourite show of all time is a nature documentary series called Barassi's World. Do you remember that?
Right, yes, I do.
Where he used to just do the top and tail. He just used to set up the nature doco, but he would set it all up in the language of the football coach. So it'd be the Incas. They had guts, determination. but he wasn't intending to be funny. The Aztecs, they put in.
After three-quarter time, the Aztecs went right off.
They're taking it one century at a time.
Yeah.
Liked it.
Sloppily ever after. Is anyone else annoyed by the use of incorrect grammar in the Offspring promos on Channel 10? Clearly, it should be happily ever after instead of happy ever after. More frightening, this promo was probably reviewed by several levels of staff before being released. Carol Mazek, Middle Park.
That is frightening.
What's frightening is that letter was probably reviewed by several levels of Green Guide management before being published. I just picture
should
when
it
they
be not more frighteningly.
Ooh,
more frighteningly. I don't know. Happy ever after. Yeah. Are there any English fans in the audience? When I say fans,
someone who hates mispronunciations.
Just
had
gone. May you live happy ever after. Can you have happy ever after? Happy is a state, isn't it? So I could say that Steel was happy ever after. And if I took the beginning off that, I could say happy ever after. Is it wrong? Is it wrong? That's all I'm saying. Does anyone know? Has anyone got English as a first language in this room? Did anyone go past year 10? Conjugate a verb. Just put your hand up.
That's more like it, though. That is a proper Green Guide letter, that one. That's the first one that's caught the idiom.
That's really, that knows its form.
Yeah, happy, happily. That's
yeah.
Great.
And also
There should be the frustration. Four corners about it. It's so, it has to be investigated.
The intensity there. Yeah. It's like, the you know, she sees Asha Keddie's face come up. It's like, oh, fucking here we go again. If they haven't fixed that, oh, happy. I like that kind of level of anger too from Madziak from Middle Park.
Middle Park. God.
You wrote that letter.
All right, this one I'm gonna leave out. I'm gonna censor what they're talking about, and then I'll tell you, because this is a serious topic. After a wait of 4 months, Censored lovers have a children's censored show. Censored has gone down market and downhill. It's a big turnoff and acutely disappointing. Is it too much to expect of the ABC that it produces a responsible censored program for adults? It can't be that hard. There are plenty of good precedences, but alas, very few originating from Australia. I now cling to the hope that there will be a new BBC-produced censored program too. Oh, for the Monty Don. And that's from Peter Kelly, Armadale. The show was Gardening Australia. How fucking worked up is Peter that there's apparently children now on Gardening Australia, and children have no place in the garden.
Now Gardening, what was Peter Cundall? Was he Gardening Australia?
I think he was, yeah.
And then they got a kind of like a stopgap after him, guy whose name I can't remember. Does anyone remember that? Stephen Wright? And he was
Stephen Wright, really? The comedian?
Even being in the garden. Compost makes me just wild.
I don't know the new guy on it, because when people would write letters complaining about him, they'd never mention him by name. They'd just go, that new host. Oh, he was never to be referred as.
Yeah, one of the nameless men in TV, and there are nameless people, and now they've got Costa, because he's crazy and animated and fun, but he is obviously getting children in the garden and doing children's segments, and you don't want to see that. That's for, you know, wildlife or whatever it is on Channel 10.
We'll totally show you wild.
Totally wild. We'll show you how to grow tomatoes, or, you know, getting a carrot on a little bit of cotton wool. You don't want that shit on your adult gardening show. You want some serious sod turning. I want to know the date when you cut back your roses. ABC has a gardening show on Saturday mornings on Hilary Harper's show, and they have a date when it's time to cut back the roses, and people constantly ask. And then one morning in July, they will say, today's the day. It's a day of great joy. So people take it really seriously. You don't want to, it should not try and turn it into an entertainment program. This is about compost, and for people over a certain age, this is their reason to live. They do. They watch the seasons, and they need to know what's going on in the garden. I can't stand that little Greek man with his fucking children's segments. He's killing me!
But his ABC viewers hate tonal changes to their programs. Remember a few years ago when The Bill went more commercial? Remember when suddenly it was like a soap opera and there was romance and divorce and people were just, we liked it better when it was a chase through a building site and a tramp dying because of a burnt mattress. It's just nothing. We don't want to hear about the cops' personal lives. That was a big deal.
Yeah, I reckon that change was awful when they tried to ramp it up. Yeah.
See? People are still angry.
Well, yeah, and I thought
you said you hadn't written a letter. Well, here's a much brighter take on the new presenter, and they've had some fun with it. If you like your metaphors, buckle in. New garden in bloom. So glad to see Gardening Australia has turned over a new leaf.
Bang.
Done some weeding.
Kapow.
And planted Costa in as the new presenter.
Zing.
And then they just drop the ball. There's a whole new enthusiasm about the program. And at last...
Okay, let's come up with our own metaphor. There's a whole new enthusiasm budding on the program.
You're not meant to speak through the letters, I have to say.
Okay, sorry.
We need that kid that was here on the first one that threatened Kindle's life. That was good. There's a whole new enthusiasm about the program, and at last, someone is getting the children involved. Have started watching again. And that's from Julie Hosking, Alexandra.
Love the metaphors.
Mm.
I love a... You've got to be careful not to change metaphor, though. If you're on a sailing metaphor, you know, stick to it. If you're on a what people like to eat for dinner metaphor, you've got to stick to your metaphor.
Don't change metaphors. Don't change. Midstream.
Yeah.
What's going on? Our next special guest, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Worse
I thought Peter Hellier was coming in for his... Strawny was going to make a last-minute appearance on the podcast.
Worse has happened at sea. The ABC newsreader who referred to the Titanic as a maritime disaster like none other should get out the history books. So too should many of the other commentators who seemed totally unaware of the loss of the Wilhelm Gustloff on January 30th, 1945. Sometimes referred to as Hitler's Titanic, this disaster cost more than 9,000 lives. Mark Hill, Middle Park. Also, let us not forget of the Poseidon. That was another...
Sure.
That sunk several times.
The Pollywood side? Is that still floating? The Pollywood side adventure.
The night is young.
No, that's...
But why have people... Is it because it's coming... Because it's come out in 3D. Why are people Titanic mad all over again? Because we saw... a friend of mine saw an ad there promoting Irish tourism by saying, come to the place where the Titanic was built. Is that the reason why you would choose Ireland as your holiday destination?
I am kind of fascinated with it. And they had this massive museum interactive thing come out to the Melbourne Museum last year.
I thought you were going to talk about the theatre restaurant in Williamstown. No, we'll get to that.
I've actually done a postcard story at that theatre restaurant.
Have you?
And the guy who runs it is this crazy Hungarian who says, every night it's a disaster. And you can go steerage or first class, and the food is different, you know, according to how much you pay, but it's more fun in steerage as it was back then. Yes. You drink beers and sing sea shanties, and then there's pipes come down and there's water runs down the walls. It's full on, it's great. And then there's grates on the floor and water runs in under the floor, and then but it doesn't sink and you make it into New York. The trouble is 1,500 people died, and so, as Adam Rosenbach says, why wouldn't you have other massive historical disasters as theatre restaurants?
Here like, we go.
This is Rosenbach's material, not mine.
Oh, hang on.
I thought his idea of having a Holocaust theatre restaurant was just bad taste. I won't be a part of it.
No, disgraceful.
It's 100 years anniversary of the sinking. That's why it's back in vogue.
Let's celebrate the deaths.
But
of
apparently,
all those people.
James Cameron, when he released the first one, was doing press conferences and it had complaints about a spoiler alert. And so had to start press conferences by saying, okay, it's a historical event, the ship sinks, and people were devastated. Right. They were coming along to see the film, didn't want to know that.
It's like that Beaconsfield on Sunday night. How's that going to end?
Well, apparently they've taken some liberty and they both die. Oh, Shane. Oh, yeah.
Koshy is the only survivor. Yeah. I see. And Steve Izard's playing Richard Carlton.
And Steve Izard told me a very kind of an intense story about that. He was down shooting Beaconsfield and he's playing Richard Carlton, who died of a heart attack in a press scrum down there, as you'll remember. And so he's getting ready for the part, and it's, you know, when you're about to go in front of the cameras, there's those nerves, and it's like, well, I hope I do this guy some justice. I'm playing a real person. And there's the knock on the, you know, door. Steve, Richard Carlton's wife and son are here to see you.
Oh.
And they were on set watching the filming, and he said it was so stressful because I'm playing their dead husband and father. So they're watching and, you know, he has a heart attack and dies, and just like it's like people are weeping, and he said it wasn't great.
And it's in the actual location where
it's right there where it happened, and he's playing. He's reenacting somebody's death in front of their closest loved ones. Hope they listen to this show.
Did he cheer him up afterwards with a bit of gay flight attendant gear? Or?
Yes, he did. And they all went off to live happy ever after.
Thank our guests.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Lawrence Mooney, Mr. Tony Martin.
Cheers.
Lawrence, there's no point plugging your show. It's completely sold out.
It's sold out. It's done.
At Lawrence Mooney on the tweet in?
I am at Lawrence Mooney, and okay. I do respond.
Excellent.
I respond to every individual one. Sometimes with a load of drunken vitriol on a Friday night. But
I've noticed that your tweeting gets really interesting after about 1:30 on a Friday night.
My wife said, no more. You've kind of like got a relatively high public profile, so you can't go calling people cunts. After you've taken two Valium and had a martini on a Friday night.
There is a thing in Melbourne comedy when you sometimes get a text late at night and it's like, get on Twitter, Mooney's on into his second bottle.
Just be pissed at home. Where's that phone? What have you done with a woman? Come on, I've got some tweets. But also, the ironic tweet of slagging everyone on Twitter off. That's I used to get into that. All you fuckwits. Blah, blah, blah. And just hope that someone would retweet it. Very pathetic.
My angry tweets are usually about DVDs in incorrect aspect ratios. Charlie Varrick wasn't shot in 4:3. This is ridiculous. Get fucked. Nerds will chime in for or against.
Well, what about, you know, you read in an article. I was reading in the monthly Peter Craven, who, you know, compiles these essays and short stories every year. He's obviously a very literary kind of a guy. And he's saying, oh, Twitter is nothing. It's like, it's not even words, really. It's just a, you know, a bunch of vacuous inanities. It's like, do you read Twitter?
Well,
are they part of it? I bet they're not.
The fancy authors don't like it. Jonathan Franzen did this big rant in the Guardian newspaper a few weeks ago saying, Twitter is everything that I am against. And I remember thinking, like brevity. Maybe lose a few chapters. Get it down. I'm sure you could get that last one down to 140 characters. Still make pretty much the same point.
Tony, have you got anything to plug?
I don't have anything of my. I think I'm working with Wayne Hope and Robin Butler on something, but it's not back from the chemist yet, so I can't.
All right, well,
plug it. But I will mention.
If you want to find out about it, listen to Triple R. And
Tano, what? I must have been desperate for a topic. No offense.
Speaking really? About Tony, Wayne Hope, and Robin Butler, go and see Bob Franklin's show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
Stubborn Monkey Disorder with Bob so Franklin good. and Gatesy from Trump.
Stephen Gates, yeah.
You'll be slightly baffled, but in a pleasurable way.
And one of the highlights of the show is that they start slagging off each other's careers
yes.
or ways of doing comedy, and it's super.
Gold.
It is very funny.
Very good. And you're Mr. Tony Martin on Twitter? Or?
Yes, I am Mr. Tony Martin.
Okay,
because,
very nice.
The guy from Black Sabbath got in first.
I'm glad that
he tweets about aspect ratio a fair bit as well. So
I do every time that German cyclist has an accident, I get so many condolences. I think people might be taking the piss, but they love to do it.
I went to look up Ross Noble on Twitter the other day to send something, and
he's real Ross Noble.
Yeah, and I went to the other Ross, like just Ross
the
Noble,
fake one, right.
And all his ats, 50 people congratulating him on how good his festival show was.
Right.
And so this
has Ross got the tick? You know, you can get the tick. If
what
you're,
is the tick?
The tick. Do you know that on Twitter? So if you know who the real person is who's got the blue tick, and so it's the real Steve Martin. But no one in Australia has got the blue tick except Julia Morris. How did Julia Morris get the blue tick? Lawrence Mooney doesn't have a blue tick.
Well, no, there's no other real Lawrence Mooneys.
But does that...
Oh, there are some, but right. like...
But there could be someone pretending to be...
I'm sure there's a lot of Julia
be.
Morris's.
Oh, right. Right,
okay. I mean, is there
how
another...
it's worked out?
Is there...
Because, you know, Yo-Yo Ma's got the blue tick. There can't be too many other Yo-Yo Ma's. Don't know how it works. Julia Morris is pulling some strings. That's what she's doing.
Yo-Yo Ma's pulling some strings.
There you go. Wait!
Thanks, Thank these guys. Much. Get a T-shirt if you want. We'll see you back in normal iTunes land next week. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Good night.
Thanks for coming along, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
That was a lot
Thank
of fun.
Okay. Oops, watch it. Cables.
Watch it.
Is this podcast edited, Steele?